Coming up on today's show,
I'll never put myself in a position to sacrifice my relationship with music. I've done it before and it's not worth it. And it's one of the most important relationships that I have in my life.
Don't you go and get greedy. You got a wife at home. And your sonny really needed you. You know, if you had picked up the phone.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from New York City, my guest is a singer, songwriter, piano player who released her debut album just over 3 weeks ago and fittingly did an album release party at the popular music club called Pianos there in the Big Apple. She has upcoming shows in New York, March 28th and May 11th in the city and April 24th in Brooklyn. A music video for one of the songs from her new album was just released on February 23rd, and she currently has close to 66,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, where her top track has over 1.2 million streams. Off of her brand new album, you've been hearing a song of hers called All Be Gone. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Emmy Jo.
Hi!
Emmy Jo, it's great to have you. Thanks for making time to be on the show.
Oh my goodness. Thank you for having me on the show. This is an awesome opportunity to sit and chat with you.
Yeah, my pleasure. This is certainly an exciting time, what with the new album having just come out. Let's start first, though, by having you share with the audience about the song of yours that was just playing called All Be Gone.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So All Be Gone is the first track on my album, and All Be Gone is about just how there are simply consequences for actions. And there's this like emphasis on the importance of those consequences, essentially. So I think that's why I wanted to start this project with that song, because I think it kind of sets the scene for the story I'm trying to tell.
Being that the song was being talked over and the audience couldn't hear the lyrics, how are you tying in the message that you just described with the title All Be Gone?
Yeah, so the All Be Gone message essentially is like, when you do something that hurts people that are very close to you, the consequence is like you may lose those people that you hurt.
Wow. Is this a solo write? Is the whole album solo writes, or are there co-writes, one or more, on this album?
So there are co-writes on the last song of this album, mainly in the focus of the instrumental portion, but still such an important part of the song. But otherwise, I wrote this album by myself.
Okay, interesting. We're going to come back to it, folks, and Emmy Jo, I promise. There, of course, are going to be people coming to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment because they are fans, they are followers of Emmy Jo's. And to those folks, I say thank you, welcome, hello, stick around, listen to some other episodes of the podcast. But for those of you who are just being introduced to Emmy Jo for the first time, please tell us about your background, including one of the highlights along the way, which was a video from March of last year that went viral, 3.5 million views on TikTok alone and a combined total of more than 5 million views across all the platforms. I think you're not from New York City originally also.
I'm not. No, I'm actually from Lincoln, Nebraska, which, as I tell people that in New York, they have simply no idea where that is. It's right in the middle, of the country. So I'm from Nebraska, and my husband and I actually moved to New York to pursue careers in entertainment. Both of us. Yes. We were like, well, let's get married. And this team's going to make their way out to New York City because we had really big aspirations for our lives.
When was that? When did the two of you move there?
We moved here a little over a year ago. Oh. Maybe like 16 months ago, I'm guessing.
Wow.
But we love it. And it really is the city of opportunity. And I've believed that since the first day we moved here. We had only been in New York for a couple of months when that video went viral.
Yeah. Explain to the audience what I'm referring to, that viral video.
Oh, absolutely. So my sweet, sweet husband, he's like my biggest cheerleader. He has believed from day one that TikTok is like the route that you have to take to be successful in the music industry, which I do believe that it is a big help, right, in the music industry. So the video that we're referring to is I was at work and I was working as a barista because I needed to make money in the day to pursue music outside of that. And my husband was recording me taking people's orders and working on the cafe bar. And he just put a little message on the video that said, my wife serves all these people and they don't know that she's an incredibly talented artist. It was something along those lines. And he put the song Yellow Year to that video to promote my music, and it just started to soar and people started to respond so kindly to Yellow Year. I think on that video, because I mean, it's so easy to get caught up in like the comments and just like, it's exciting because people are hearing this song that I wrote for the first time. And there's so many of them and they all loved it. I think maybe there was like two mean comments and my husband was like, we have haters. We made it. Like, it was such a positive experience. And I think it just reinforced, like, this is what I love about music is that there's community and you can build community and there's an audience of people who like want to hear your music. And it's just about getting it to a platform for people. And yeah, it completely has changed the trajectory.
Well, and what I'm hearing is what you said, plus the fact that I thought you were about to say it was an affirmation for me of moving to New York. Because yes, we hear about artists all the time that it's not a surprise that you were a barista by day and an artist by night. But you hear those stories, and now to say that I moved from Nebraska to New York City, yeah, and guess what? Within very, very little time that I was there, all of a sudden I got this affirmation that, yeah, you did the right thing moving here to New York, because here's this viral video to the tune of 5 million views.
Oh, absolutely. I think New York is such a huge component of my success, because I think it changed my mindset in a lot of ways. Not only was it like, oh, I can make a video go viral on TikTok, but it was, I can move my life to this place that I never in a million years dreamed was possible. Like, I never thought growing up that I would live in New York City. I may have dreamed of it, but it was never something that I thought was possible.
Well, let me ask you a follow-up question, although I want to put in a quick plug because Emmy Jo just talked about TikTok. Folks, if you did not hear it, go back to episode 524, just three short weeks ago. Drew Schroeder, he talked about TikTok and music discoverability on that platform. He had just done a LinkedIn post like a day before we did our interview where he said that this recent development that he ended up talking about, quote, has created a vacuum for new music, end quote. So go back and listen to episode 524. In fact, I'll put a link to it on the show page for Emmy Jo's episode on nhte.net. But Emmy Jo, what were you doing in Nebraska music-wise before the move? Because yes, people talk about, I'm going to move to New York, I'm going to move to LA, I'm going to move to Nashville, but there's generally a pretty solid foundation that they had built for themselves in their music career before they make the move. So what was happening for you music-wise in Nebraska that you felt, hey, this is someplace I always wanted to move to, and the time is right because...
Yeah, that's a great question. I guess what was happening in Nebraska was I was setting the foundation for my music creating experience. I had never made music until 2021 is when I stepped into a studio for the first time. And that was because my husband bought my studio time as a Christmas gift. Like, it was never anything that I was actively pursuing. It was always my husband being like, I believe in you. I think you're incredibly talented.
Interesting.
And I am going to provide the opportunity for you to try something because I think you have the potential.
Interesting. And that's a different story than a lot of people tell because folks will say, oh gosh, I was playing every weekend, or I was playing three shows a week. And so I was seasoned, I was ready. And they talk all about their live shows. And you're saying, no, I was developing, creating original music. It wasn't about going out and performing. It was, I've been developing my own sound, my own style. And so I'm ready to take that to the Big Apple.
Absolutely. I had never performed live before I moved to New York City.
Whoa.
In fact, I was so afraid of it. Every time my husband would try to encourage me to get on a stage to perform my own music, I always had an excuse. Because when you decide to put yourself out there, it's a very vulnerable experience. I have always been a very anxious person, so it's a lot to put yourself out there. And I wanted to at least know that people were liking what I was putting out before I was going to put myself in a position to have people hear it live.
But this is a potential teaching moment for anyone who has faced that same fear. What finally helped you break through to where you finally said, okay, I've made enough excuses. I have to finally get on a stage and perform live.
I had to basically suck it up. There was only so many times I could say no before I felt like I had to say yes to this. So we decided to rip the band-aid off by flying back home and doing my first show back in Nebraska,
Okay.
just where my support system was.
Yeah, I like
And
that. I like that.
yeah, and we did a hometown show, and it was after that I was like, this is exhilarating. I have to do this again.
And so, present day, congratulations on the new album, which has 10 songs, and the title is, I pronounce it Maddie. It's actually MADI, which is an acronym. Tell the audience what those letters stand for, the inspiration behind this album, the themes you wanted to address, and then who you worked with on the album, which, by the way, I'm assuming was recorded there in New York City.
It was actually recorded in Nashville. Yeah, yes, I work with a producer down in Nashville. But I can start at the beginning and we can work backwards.
Okay.
So, Maddie, you have that right. I've been calling her Maddie to most people. It is MADI, which stands for Mommy and Daddy Issues. And I had the concept of Maddie before I ever had any songs of Maddie. I knew I wanted it to be called Mommy and Daddy Issues because I felt like that resonated very true to my life. So, yeah, the inspiration behind this debut album is I felt like I wanted to tell my life story because as I grew up, in a house with my grandparents, actually. My grandparents raised me. My mom and my dad, both of them, I think, wanted to be there for me as I grew up. I grew up in a house where, like, my mom had me at a very young age, and then she had a whole bunch of kids and was not able to be incredibly present, whether that was just like due to mental health issues or there was just a lot of chaos in my life growing up. And so as I grew up, I would tell people that I lived with my grandparents, and I would get a lot of questions and would always answer very matter-of-factly, like, this is my life. I did not grow up with my parents. I grew up with my grandparents. They did a great job raising four kids that they never asked to raise, and I'm very appreciative of them. But I never really gave myself the space to process my childhood. I was always just like, this is exactly what happened. Like, stone faced, this is my life. And I never really allowed myself time to slow down and really process what my childhood was until I moved to New York City.
And how appropriate that a car horn just beeped in the background to let us authenticate being in New York City. So is that where you're going with that, that the album was the opportunity to process it and to get your thoughts out?
Absolutely. That was why I wanted it to be called Mommy and Daddy Issues, because I wanted to really dive into like how childhood really does impact your life. And I mean, as I've lived in New York City, I have gone to therapy, and there's some very, very talented and incredible therapists that I've worked with here. And I always kind of used to joke about how therapy always would address the child and the inner child, but it's so crazy how much more I understand myself the more I dive into that. And this album was really an opportunity to focus more on like how my relationship with my parents growing up and like my lack thereof relationship has really impacted the other relationships that I have in my life.
Now, I'm looking at the album title and I have my publicist hat on, and I'm thinking this is actually a brilliant strategy, because you could have just titled the album Mommy and Daddy Issues and people would look at it and go, oh, okay. But when you put MADI, it has to have them ask the question, what is that about? This is an acronym. What does that stand for? So now the conversation has started, as opposed to there is no engagement. They look at the title and they move on. Was that deliberate for that reason?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always like to have people ask questions. I want people to be engaged. And I think as someone who has followed artists and musicians for a very long time, I've always found like the people who provide spaces to ask questions are the people who get a lot of engagement.
I like that. I'm not going to be playing it. So audience, all the more reason for you to go looking for Emmy Jo's new album when I give you her online destinations shortly. But there's a song on this release called Mean It Now, which delves into the topic of accountability. Emmy Jo, can you share with the audience the angle that you come at that from in that song and the emotion you were going for with that particular track?
Absolutely. So it's actually my favorite song on the album. Mm. It just has been, as we wrote it, and then as I've sat with it before everybody else has had the opportunity to hear it, I feel like that song does a really good job of showcasing how when you don't have answers to questions and you're trying to make sense of something that's happened to you in your life, you can kind of like end up in circles, like going around in circles of like, how did I get here? At least maybe I know I feel that way a lot of the time, and perhaps other people feel that way too. If I just get stuck on something and it's really hard for me if I can't understand it, and a lot of what I experienced as a child, I couldn't understand why it had to happen to me. And there's just a lot of like this like repetition of like, just say sorry. Like, it's easy. You should just be able to say sorry, but it just like, you can feel how it builds within the music. And it's just like this like cry for like, can you just take accountability for what you've done? Like, could you just take accountability for your actions? Can you mean it now? And yeah, I think it's sometimes you just have to accept that like, you may not get an apology. You may not get that accountability. And that's kind of what this song is about. It's like, you really can want something, but you may not ever get it. And you just have to like allow yourself to feel that and then move forward.
See, and I think of all the memes that we see on social media that try to make that kind of impact, and they don't, because they're words on a screen. And when you put music under it and you write it in a way that is going to build anticipation or build emotion and accomplish what you just described, That's all the difference in the world in terms of really moving people, as opposed to looking at a meme, shrugging your shoulders, and then scrolling to the next post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really easy to fall into like a passive lifestyle. But I've always been the type of person who wants to feel everything. I don't want to ever be numb to my life. And so the music side of it, like, I've always been told I feel my emotions very deeply. And to me, that's the biggest compliment that you can receive, because I don't think feelings are ever something that should be feared. I think they're things that should be tools in our belts.
Well, and having said that, and then listened to you talk about Mean It Now and accountability, I think that speaks to anyone that would say, well, I don't have mommy and daddy issues. This album is not for me. I think you're saying you can still interpret the music to different facets of life that don't have to specifically be coming from a background that you describe, where you were raised by your grandparents.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why I like this song specifically on this album, because I think even if you don't have mommy and daddy issues, Mean It Now, I feel like, can apply to anybody who has had any type of relationship that has maybe fallen apart with somebody else. And if you have mommy and daddy issues and it applies to you in that scenario, like, all the better, because for me, like, when I was a kid, I had always wished that there was an album to help me feel better through the life that I was living. And so if anything, like, this is my gift for the younger me who really, like, would have loved to have been able to scream, cry, Mean It Now, and as a little kid in her room, you know?
Wow. Wow. I can't help but think back to what you were saying about I didn't perform live until I moved to New York. I wonder, how did the album release party at Pianos go last month? Tell us all about that night, the excitement, the vibe, the set list. Just recreate that special event for us, if you would, although I'm sure you're going to start off by telling us how nervous you were.
Oh, yes. I always am nervous. And it's so funny because my husband still asks me if I get nervous, which the answer is yes. I'll always be nervous. But I think we found a way to change the language from nervous to excited, because your body feels a very similar sensation. So I was excited. I wasn't nervous. But the show itself was an incredible opportunity to, one, sing the album in track order. That's the only time I planned to do that, was for that event, because I wanted it to be like, you're hearing this body of work that I worked so hard on, and you're going to hear it in order, but you're going to hear it from the source. So I had friends fly in from across the country, which was really special.
Whoa.
Yeah, friends from home and friends who had moved and I hadn't seen in a while. They've been following my journey and they know how important this was for me, so they flew out and it made it all the more special. And we had all of our community that we've built in New York come out, and a lot of our community here we actually had involved in the process of, whether that was like the marketing materials for the show, the photo shoots. Like, we've made a lot of creative friends here who we had involved in this show as well. And yeah, it was just, I don't know. I told my husband it felt like maybe a lower scale equivalent of our wedding, you know? Like, a lot of people, I feel like, in your life after you get married, I think like the next big thing is maybe you have a child or you get a house. For me, like, my next big thing was like, I'm going to release my first album, and then it's going to be the first of many albums to come. And this is a huge, huge deal for me, because it's something I've always wanted to do.
Now, was this you and the piano, or was there bass, guitar, drums, cajon, anything like that?
So actually, I only sang. I had a fabulous band behind me called The Soul, and one of my best friends who moved out here shortly after me from Nebraska, She plays the violin. And so we flew her violin across the country so that she could be a part of the performance as well. Because I really love including people in showcasing their abilities. And that was just so fun because it was like a whole separate side story of trying to get that violin to New York City. There's pictures of it in Florida hanging out. So yeah, it was such a great collaborative experience. It was so exhilarating to see people get excited about certain songs at the same time. There was like one moment that I was hoping would happen, and it did, of me singing the lyrics, "I've Got a Little Bit of Maddie in Me." And the crowd went crazy because it was the first time they fully understood what Maddie was.
I love it. I love it.
I'll always remember that night. And it was such a whirlwind, but it was like a core memory.
I love it. I love it. Let's take a step back a bit here and take a wider look at what could be called the sad girl bangers phenomenon, which is your music bringing people to a place where melancholy meets infectious beats. I would love to hear your insights on that experience that you're creating for listeners at this point in your career.
Yes. So, like I said, I feel like emotion is something that should be embraced, not something that should be feared. And for me, I've always been drawn to like a power ballad or someone who's very honest in their emotional experience and as they tell it through music. So Sad Girl Bangers has been kind of what, when people ask me what type of music I make, I tell them sad girl bangers because I simply do not know like the logistics and like the categories of which I would fit in genre wise. I've also been told by many people that they're not sure which genre I would necessarily fit in either. So I'm just going to start claiming sad girl bangers and that's the genre from here on out. But yeah, I think it's this idea of I would love for people to embrace the emotional experience. Like there was a show I did back in the fall where I sang Mommy Issues and somebody was outwardly sobbing in the audience to the point where people were paying attention to them while the show was going. But everyone was like, oh, was that so frustrating? I'm like, no, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Like someone felt something so deep and powerful from something that I sang.
Right.
To make people feel something with your music, that's the whole dream.
And from the category of being up on stage going, are these people even paying attention? That person was paying attention.
Yeah, so I felt so connected to the experience just because like music can move people, and to move someone to tears is like the ultimate compliment.
I'm thinking of the scene in the movie Tootsie when Dustin Hoffman was auditioning and he's standing on stage and the people who are supposed to be watching his audition are sitting down there just talking to each other. And he stops his audition and he says, I'm sorry, is my acting up here interfering with your talking down there?
Yeah. It's so, yeah. I mean, it's so just rewarding to have the opportunity in the first place to like get up and to share a part of you. And then to have people receive it in a way that is emotional, it's so, yeah, it's rewarding. And I am a big proponent of the Sad Girl Bangers. I think everybody needs to have a little playlist for themselves for Sad Girl Bangers because it's important.
Well, and let's face it, any performer will always say, if I just move one person with my song or with my performance. And so on that night, you accomplished exactly that. If that person crying was the only person who was touched, who was affected by your performance, then it was a success.
Absolutely. That's all artists want. They just want to make somebody feel something.
Amen. Amen. I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from New York City by singer, songwriter, piano player Emmy Jo. Visit her official website at emmyjomusic.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard her talking all about her new album called Maddie, M-A-D-I, which just came out less than 4 weeks ago and can be purchased from Apple Music and the usual online digital music retailers. Support Emmy Jo by buying her original music. You can follow her on Spotify, but don't just stream. If you live or will be in downstate New York, March 28th, she will be performing at Bowery Electric in the city. April 24th, she will be at Brooklyn Music Kitchen. And May 11th, she will be performing at Heaven Can Wait in New York City. Keep up with her online for dates and locations as other shows are added, I'm sure. On emmyjomusic.com, look for logos, links for her social media, meaning Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, and follow and engage with her through those. If you listen to this podcast regularly, thank you, of course, and I must sound like a broken record because, yes, I was live on the OWL app again this morning. In a second, I'm going to tell you about downloading it because you can call me and others on there. Who else is on there? Well, I never talk about this on this podcast, but I have another podcast, and I saw that a former NFL quarterback, a former Super Bowl MVP, is on the OWL app too. So I'm going to be giving him a call in there to see about booking him as a guest on my other podcast. Lots of really fascinating people on there that you're missing out on connecting with, but that doesn't need to be the case any longer. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click anywhere it says home, and then read the article that I have posted there under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. There's links in there to download OWL for free from the App Store or Google Play. Plus, you will see my invitation code in there, which is a required field as you're setting it up on your phone. This is OWL that I keep saying, like the bird, except with two W's and two L's. Call me on there. We can talk for just 10 minutes, or we can go longer if you need or want to. Emmy Jo, since I was just directing people to Apple Music and other online digital music retailers, I want them to know, just because this is your debut album, you have released other original music previously. In fact, there are singles in your back catalog that start with February 2021. Nonetheless, I still have to say, from the category of results not typical, close to 66,000 monthly listeners on Spotify. You know it doesn't normally happen that fast, right? When you put out that song in February 2021, I can't imagine you expected in just 3 years to be where you are today.
I simply could never have expected to be where I am today. But once I had like a goal for myself, once I hit a million streams, if that were to ever happen, is when I was going to buckle down and take this so seriously. Mm. And at the beginning of this year, Yellow Year had a million streams, and so I'm buckled down. I'm taking this so seriously.
Have you stopped to have those moments, though, that I'm saying, though, where you went, this is amazing, and I'm psyched, and I'm going to buckle down, but it's not supposed to happen this fast? You don't move to New York City, and all of a sudden, you get more than a million streams on a song and 66,000 monthly listeners on Spotify. Have you had those moments where you're going, thank you, this is, wow, thank you, universe, thank you, God, whatever you believe in?
Absolutely. I've had those moments a lot, probably more than I need to. Almost every day, it's like, I can't believe that this is happening. Mm. And that my life can be whatever I want it to be.
Mm.
It has to be. You have to be able to have those moments with yourself. Like, I could have stayed in Nebraska and I could have lived a very peaceful, easy life that I've known forever, but I don't really like just sitting back and letting life tell me what to do. I think I would much rather tell life what I'm looking for from it.
So then let's stick with the topic of mindset here. I would love to hear your insight into transforming your art into a sanctuary where vulnerability is actually celebrated, as well as how unwavering confidence, passion, and empathy fit into your musical journey.
Yeah, I think mindset is like the very first battle you have to pick when you do something like this. I have seeing how people in positions of like pursuing fame or pursuing like recognition, whether that's like on social media, I've seen how it can really bring you down if people don't agree with you or if people don't like what you're putting out. I've just seen how the online world can really do a lot of harm. And so for me, it was about putting myself in the right mindset with this type of like desire to put music out. I have to always remind myself that I make this music for myself. I'm making this music for me to stream it on a platform and for me to enjoy it. And the truer I am to what I like, the better it's going to be for me as I enjoy the process of making music. And if other people like it along the way, then that's really incredible too, because perhaps it's relatable. Like perhaps the human experience really is a universal experience. But if I do it for other people, that's when it starts to like bring in these other pressures of like, do they like it? Like at the end of the day, I do this for myself because it's my safe place. Music has always been my safe place from my crazy, crazy life. Like I've always used singing and songwriting and listening to music to make myself feel better. And it's my sanctuary. So the second I start letting other people into my sanctuary, there's got to be boundaries. I have to remember like the why behind this. Like, why am I doing this?
Well, the other part of it too is that if you're going to make yourself vulnerable, the listener is going to get the authentic you. And so to transform your art into a sanctuary where vulnerability is actually celebrated, everybody wins because you get to pour out what's in your heart, what's therapeutic for you. The audience gets a front row seat to it. And like you said, you're not living in anticipation of, I think this is what people want to hear. Well, how do you know that? What are you basing that on? So it's coming from who you truly are and the message that you want to get out. Like you said, it might just be for yourself, but ultimately it's going to translate into other people saying, hey, I can relate to this, because you are being vulnerable and you are saying, yeah, mommy, daddy issues. You're holding up your hand. That's me right here. And I'm not afraid to tell my story, but I'm going to do it musically. And I know there are going to be other people out there that are going to go right there with you.
Yeah. I think that's like the reason why things have gone maybe as well as they have is I really try to focus on the why, and anything that interrupts the why I'm doing this, it just doesn't get to come along for the journey, because I'll never put myself in a position to sacrifice my relationship with music. I've done it before and it's not worth it. And it's one of the most important relationships that I have in my life.
Well, so sticking with the why, I'm going to throw a but at you. Since you have been fortunate to get the audience that I've mentioned a couple of times now, almost 66,000 monthly listeners on Spotify, tell me, why do you feel your music resonates with listeners worldwide? Because in doing so, you're having to bridge cultural and emotional divides.
It's so funny to me because I've, like, Yellow Year is my song that really, I think, has spoken to the world. I think there is this universal experience of, like, when you're going through hard times and you just want to, like, be okay, like, that's a universal experience. And I think with Yellow Year, it's like anyone could tell you that, like, you just like da 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 da, like, we just want to have a good time. It's your Yellow Year. And I think what's so awesome about that is like those people who find that and are like, yeah, I want to have a good time, are then the people who then find my other music. And then they're like, oh, like, it's okay to be happy. And it's okay to maybe be a little bit sad too. Because that's the way that I think most of my audience is found. Like, I would say Yellow Year is probably one of the happier songs that I have. And if people found me through that and then stick around to hear the sad things too, I feel like I've done my job.
I love it. I love it. And audience, Yellow Year is the song that I was referring to in the intro when I said more than 1.2 million streams. Everything that we've talked about today has been from a place that will chew you up and spit you out, yet here you are standing tall with all the successes we've talked about, and I'm referring to New York City. Can you describe that environment, Emmy Jo, and being one creator in a city of almost 9 million people where it can be real easy to feel like, does anyone see me? Does anyone care?
Yeah, I think this city is, like I said, all about the opportunity. So while sometimes it may be easy to be like, is anybody hearing me? Like, I like to enter situations with like, you will see me and I'll make sure of it. But I also like to do it in a like, not in your face type of way. Like a very genuine, like, I like to meet new people. I like to network. I like to have conversations with people. And like, when I walk into a room, I always want to leave it better than I found it. So when I am in New York and like pursuing these opportunities, I'm giving the most real version of myself. And I think because of that, I'm able to continue to like enjoy my experiences in New York.
As we start winding things down, tell me, other than the live shows that I mentioned, what future plans do you have? Are there any upcoming projects, collaborations, creative endeavors that you can share at this time?
I'm already plotting my next project. I don't have all the finite details, but just everybody know I'm writing every day.
Wow.
And I am already brainstorming the next thing because I am ready to keep making art.
Which is interesting to me because you would think that, well, Bruce, why would you ask me that? I'm in full-on promotion mode now of Maddie and trying to get interviews, trying to play live shows, trying to promote the new album as much as I can. And here you are saying, I'm already thinking about the next one.
Yeah, I mean, you have to. It doesn't just stop when your project comes out. It's what are you thinking of next? What are you doing to promote all of this? And not but, it's and.
Well, and I think what you're saying is that you could tell yourself, I am just going to go in full self-promotion mode of Maddie, but darn it, you just can't turn off that songwriter brain.
Oh gosh, no, it never stops. It really is like so silly because when I'm like getting ready for bed at night, all of a sudden I'm singing something and then I tell my husband I need to break out the piano because I need to record this. And he's like, we can't do this every 3 hours. And I'm like, yes, we can. So it's funny. The brain is always thinking.
Well, except that I'm sure there have to be times when you get an idea for a hook, you just sing it into your phone and that's it, right? I can't imagine that 100% of the time you're running to the piano.
No, not every time. Just if I'm home.
Gotcha. Gotcha. We're going to close today with the song that I mentioned back in the intro that Emmy Jo just released a music video for. And by the way, Emmy Jo, bravo. I watched the video. And while I do want you to tell the audience all about this song that they're about to hear, talk to me about making that music video too, including where the heck that was done, because I made the mistake of assuming it was done in New York City until I got to the end and I saw the beautiful drone shot with the mountains in the background. And then, yes, of course, the important 1-800 number two. Go ahead and share with the audience all about Watchdog.
Absolutely. So Watchdog is a song that, well, first of all, when I made that song, it just kind of flowed right out of me. It felt like something I had known for a really long time. But the song is essentially about just when you have somebody that you're constantly waiting on and like they maybe just don't realize that they have it so good and they go seeking for fulfillment elsewhere, like what happens to that person who's doing everything right and is being their best self, but they're not getting that best version of somebody in return. And the reason why we chose to film that music video in Utah is because my creative partner, Kenz is her name. She's so talented. She actually is from Utah and really wanted to focus on like the breaking the cycle aspect of Watchdog and how that can apply to maybe like themes that she sees within relationships in Utah and that community. So it was very strategic. It was very intentional that we did that there because we wanted to take this story of the idea of the watchdog and apply it to like the real life experiences of people in that kind of community where like they find themselves doing all the right things and maybe ending up in some bad relationships. And I just thought it had a great why. And so I think if you can tell a good story with a great why and you have the opportunity, you should absolutely do it.
Now, you make a cameo in that video, but who are the two primary stars of the video, the couple that we see in there?
That couple, they both are actually, I think, ex-Mormons from Utah.
So they're actors that got hired for the video.
Actress I got hired for the video through my creative director. She casted everyone. She did an excellent job of setting everything up. I simply just flew myself to Utah and the rest, she made the history with that.
Wow. Wow. And, you know, here in Florida, we don't have, I think they're called mountains. And so early on in the interview, I knew I was going to be asking you that question, where was it shot? And I thought, well, I guess I already know the answer. She's going to say it's Nebraska. For all I know, you're going to tell me there's no mountains in Nebraska either. But interesting to learn that it was actually shot in Utah.
It was. It was shot in Utah. I don't know that there's like massive mountains like that in Nebraska. I'm from like the cornfield like region, the more flat. I'm actually from the capital, so there's not a lot of cornfields in the capital, but they're nearby. They're like on the outskirts of my city.
I've never been to Nebraska, so I will by all means take your word on it.
Yes, yes. It's a great place. If you ever are looking for a good football game, the community there, that's what you go there for.
Well, instead, I will say the next time I'm in New York City, I'm absolutely going to look you up. It was wonderful to meet you. Thank you for being on Now Hear This Entertainment. Congratulations on the new album and all the best going forward.
Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. This was lovely. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. My pleasure. With that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, piano player Emmy Jo. Do visit her official website at emmyjomusic.com. As I said before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. One more time, her new album is called Maddie, M-A-D-I, the acronym, and is available through Apple Music and the usual online digital music retailers. Support her by purchasing downloads of the new release, as well as the singles that you heard me refer to that she has been putting out over the last 3 years. Yes, you can follow her on Spotify too, but be sure to follow her on social media, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. There are links for all of those at the bottom of emmyjomusic.com. For that matter, tell her you heard her and her music on Now Hear This Entertainment. A reminder about her upcoming live shows, March 28th at Bowery Electric in New York City, April 24th at Brooklyn Music Kitchen, and May 11th at Heaven Can Wait in New York City. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Emmy Jo and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years now without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net. and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 527. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Emmy Jo. This is the one she just talked about. It's called Watchdog.
And when it's getting dark, I'll make sure to turn on the front porch light. My phone's on loud in case you call. I'll fight my tide. eyes, I'd give my all. 'Cause I'd give anything to see you come home to me. You got your watchdog, you trained a real night. She spends every night awake by the door side. Hope your shadow passes by the bottom of the door frame. You never come home, and that's a real shame. Poor little watchdog, think you need a new job. 'Cause if they never come home, what's the purpose of the watchdog? You were supposed to be good, behave. Like coming home when the clock strikes, hey, hey, hey. I'm sitting silly waiting for you by the front door. Can you tell me what I'm doing all of this for? Can you tell me? Can you tell me? You got your watchdog, you trained a real night. She spends every night awake by the door side. Hope your shadow passes by the bottom of the door frame, but you never come home. Shame, poor little watchdog. You think you need a new job? 'Cause if you never come home, what's the purpose of the watchdog? She was obedient and loyal, never got in any trouble. She spent her time looking out for you. You had to work another double, but you forgot to call her, crying, please wait for me, oh. It's crashing down like falling rubble, she won't wait for you much longer. You better get your story straight. The lights are off, her eyes are tired, doors are locked and phones on silent. I think it's too late for you, oh. And what's a man to do without his little watchdog?